After being cheated on, one of the most confusing things is that you can know that it's over. You can be consciously aware of the fact that nothing dangerous is happening right now, yet your body and mind still believe that you're in danger. Your heart starts racing when their phone lights up. You notice a slight difference in their tone. They come home 10 minutes later than you expect them to, and before you actually have any information, your mind is already raced to a million different places. Might go back to the past and remember the moment you discovered. It might go to imagine scenarios you never saw, which can sometimes be quite graphic and intrusive. You might weigh out all the possibilities of what this could mean for your future. Meanwhile, they haven't even gotten from the driveway to the front door yet. Eventually, at some point, you start wondering, what is wrong with me? Like, why can't I control my brain? Why can't I just move forward? And this is where the idea of post-infidelity stress disorder, sometimes shortened to PIST, P-I-S-D, can be helpful. It's not an official diagnosis, but there is a ton of research that shows that there are PTSD-like symptoms that can happen to someone from romantic betrayal. And so you're not being dramatic. This is not just simple jealousy. It's not just simple heartbreak. Something happened to you that fundamentally changed what your brain believes it needs to pay attention to. And to understand why, it's helpful to kind of back up and understand what a committed relationship means to your brain before the betrayal ever happens. Because when you build a life with someone, you're not consciously reevaluating their trustworthiness day to day. You couldn't function that way. You have to make certain assumptions. And I think of it almost in terms of like the philosophical questions of, are we brains in a vat? Are we living in a simulation? Do we have free will? Regardless of the independent value those questions might have in thinking about them, practically, we live as if our choices do matter. We live as if we're not just brains in a vat. Like, we still go about our lives. And it's similar to having a partner. You can't possibly put in the mental energy to solve these philosophical riddles every single day. You just assume they're going to be trustworthy. When they say they're going to work, you believe them. When they tell you who they're texting, you trust them. When they look you in the eye and they say that they love you, you allow those words to reassure you. And so your brain gradually places that person inside its own internal map of safety. Now, that doesn't mean your brain thinks they're perfect, but it means that you stop treating them like a potential stranger or a threat. Their presence is familiar. Their voice, their touch, their routines, their predictable behaviors become part of what your body and your nervous system just expect. And there's something just regulating about that, that rhythm of knowing when your partner comes home, of getting texts from them throughout the day, things like that just become built into your brain's notion of what it means to be safe. And on top of that, they also become one of the people that you would normally turn toward when something is wrong. And that's what is so psychologically disruptive. The person who represented safety and routine and normal has now become connected to danger and this chaos in your life. The person you would normally get reassurance from is the reason why you now need some type of reassurance and comforting. And so your brain is kind of scrambled because it's trying to hold two incompatible versions of the same person at the same time. The person that you love and the person who deceived you. The person who comforted you and the person who hurt you. The person who feels like home and the person who makes home now feel unsafe. That contradiction is at the heart of betrayal trauma. And the brain does not respond to that contradiction by calmly saying, well, this is an unfortunate problem. Let me think rationally about my options. It begins searching for danger. The basic function of a threat response is not to make you happy. That's not what your brain is trying to do right now. It is to prevent you from being blindsided again. So before the affair, a late arrival may have simply meant that there was traffic, or a phone notification may have just meant that they were talking to a friend. A quiet mood may have meant that your partner was just tired. After the affair, those same ordinary events may be interpreted through an entirely different filter, one that's trying to keep you safe from danger. Late means hiding. Quiet means their emotions are invested elsewhere. A locked phone means a second life. A slight inconsistency means a deliberate lie. And there's a difference between what your brain is doing and what you're trying to do. You might not be trying to cast blame on them all the time, but your brain is. Because your brain has learned that danger can exist underneath normality. It's learned that someone can appear loving while still hiding something very dangerous from you. And it's learned that your life can change in a single conversation. So what I'm describing is often called hypervigilance. which is more than just paying attention. Vigilance is paying attention. Hypervigilance is this heightened state of monitoring in which your mind is constantly looking for subtle indications that there might be another threat, that there's another shoe yet to drop. And people often talk about how they become like detectives after going through betrayal. It's like even with strangers and random people, you're dissecting these micro cues, facial expressions, pauses, small contradictions, how people position their phone, how quickly they close out of a window on a computer or an app from their phone. From the outside, this looks like just being paranoid. Internally, though, it feels like your brain is doing what it has to stay safe. And it's like there's this fundamental tension in the idea of self-trust. Your brain is saying, I trusted what I saw before and I was wrong. This time I have to look harder. And so it's like it's built in this message to itself to say, reject anything that you perceive, because that clearly isn't good enough. Keep digging. And all of this is to prevent yet another emotional catastrophe. The problem, though, is that this type of behavior rarely creates lasting safety. Because let's say you check the phone and but you find nothing. You feel better for like an hour, but then your mind says, but what if they deleted it? Let me go back and check the deleted messages. Okay, it's not there. You feel better for another hour. But what if they learned how to delete the deleted messages, to permanently delete them? Then you have to go back and ask them about it. And you ask and they answer and you push and like you kind of start yelling at them a little bit, see if you can get them to break, and they answer and you feel better for a little bit. But then the next day you remember an inconsistency from a week ago and it all just keeps on stacking. The reassurance doesn't last because the deeper belief hasn't changed. And the deeper belief is what appears safe may not actually be safe. And as long as that belief remains emotionally active, your mind can always generate another possibility to investigate, or it can convince you that you didn't look hard enough. This is also why intrusive thoughts are so common after infidelity. People often assume that if someone is replaying the affair in their mind, it must be because they secretly want to think about it. They want to hurt themselves. Usually the opposite is true. They don't want to, but they can't stop. Their minds keep returning to it because it's not been able to file the event away as having been finished. And to do that, it has to make some sense. And what that usually means is understanding what happened, what it meant, and how it fits into your life. But betrayal doesn't neatly fit into those categories. Because you may have believed the relationship was going well while the affair was happening. Or you might remember your partner showing you affection on the same day that you know, based on looking through old text messages, that they were communicating with the other person. So because now the past has these two conflicting stories, the reality you experienced and the reality that was hidden from you, it keeps trying to resurface it to get you to make sense of it. What was actually happening that night? When did it really begin? Was that memory genuine? Who else knew? What signs did I miss? This is also why new information can be so destabilizing. Suppose that you believed the affair lasted 1 month, but then 3 months later you learned that it actually lasted 6 months. And someone might say, but you already knew they cheated. Why does the exact length matter so much? It matters because that additional information doesn't merely just add 5 months into the pre-existing framework. It changes the whole framework. And it changes the meaning of those 5 months and how your memories attached to those 5 months are affected. It changes which conversations were truthful and which ones were in the subtext of lies. But most importantly, it is confirming this suspicion that you can never trust your own memory. You can never trust your own perception. And that's why your nervous system, your mind, your heart experience this not as a continuation only of the old affair, as the old betrayal, but it feels like a new betrayal. It feels like everything's falling apart again. One of the things you have to get down into your nervous system at some point is the idea that it genuinely was not your fault. And you can say that, but there is some part of you that is saying, I should have somehow been able to see through all of this. But I want you to hear very clearly that trusting someone who deliberately deceived you does not mean that there was something deceptive about your perception. It means that the deception worked. It means that they are a successful liar. Healthy relationships require a certain degree of trust. You can't ever be expected to independently verify every statement that another person makes. Your willingness to trust was not your downfall. Their decision to exploit that trust was the betrayal. and you can understand this consciously, but there will be a part of you, I can almost guarantee it, that's still going to look for a way to blame yourself because that feels more in your control. And so one way that sometimes pops up is people will go and obsess on the affair partner, trying to figure out, well, what was it about them that caused this to happen? Or what was it about me that was missing that they had that can explain this? So you study their photos, you look at their body, their age, their career, personality, or lifestyle. And again, your brain is just trying to make this a solvable equation. It's extremely painful to play the game of, well, this is what they were better at than me. This is why they were chosen and I wasn't. But despite that pain, your brain likes to play that game because it gives it an illusion of control. Because if the betrayal happened due to something that you lacked, perhaps you can change that in yourself and give yourself that illusion of control again so that it will never happen again. Because the alternative is more frightening. Someone you trusted made a series of choices that you could not control. Self-blame hurts, but that unpredictability can feel even more dangerous to our very ancient brains that operate on these categories of, am I accepted to my immediate peer group and to my partner? And this need that your brain has for predictability can also explain a lot of the ups and downs. A lot of people will tell me that they have this great date with their partner. They feel like they're well on their way to recovery. And then right as things start to get really good, they have a huge argument. That is not random. That is often happening because, again, there is a part of your brain that believes even in safety, you can never be totally safe. No matter how much you protect yourself, you can still be blindsided. Don't let your guard down. And so remembering starts to feel safer than relaxing. Being angry starts to feel safer than being vulnerable. And remaining mentally connected to the betrayal can feel like the only thing preventing it from happening again. Or can be like, if I still have one foot in that world, in that pain, then if it were to happen again, it's not like I moved on and was blindsided again because I'm still in this pain. That's why the idea of letting it go or moving forward can be so difficult to do. Because if it were to happen again, well, you're still not over it. And so it wouldn't be this huge thing. Whereas if you did get over it and then it did happen again, you look twice as dumb. You feel twice as blindsided. And I want to be really clear that the goal of healing is not to force yourself to ignore warning signs. And it's definitely not to become a blindly trusting person. And reconciliation does not mean that you have to develop this belief that your partner can never hurt you. The goal is for your mind and your body and your nervous system to stop treating every reminder and every uncertainty and every ordinary change as though the original betrayal is happening again. You want to reach a place where you can evaluate the present based on what is actually happening in the present. You can notice legitimate red flags without being consumed by them. You can tolerate uncertainty without needing to investigate every single possibility. You can remember the affair without your body reacting as though you've just discovered it. And most importantly, you can trust yourself, not because you believe, like perhaps you did subconsciously before, like you can predict every bad thing that another person will ever do, but because you trust that you can recognize what is happening, make decisions, protect yourself, and survive even if life and your partner don't go exactly as planned. And this is a much stronger form of safety than constant vigilance. It's going from an external-based safety to an internal one. Constant hypervigilance says, I will be safe only if I can protect every threat. Self-trust safety says, I will be okay even when I cannot control everything. I think this is why healing can't always be reduced to communication tips or journaling prompts or breathing techniques or reminders to think positively. Those things can help someone cope in difficult moments, and there's nothing wrong with using them. But just understand that coping with a reaction is different from doing the deeper emotional work on the pattern that's producing that reaction. Because two people might be checking their partner's phones after infidelity, but the unconscious reasons motivating it could be completely different. For one, it could be more tied to abandonment. For another, humiliation. For another, the fear of looking foolish again. For another, an older wound of being lied to or emotionally neglected long before this relationship ever began. For another, the deeper pain could be this feeling of not being good enough or that they never mattered. The outward experience can look identical, while the emotional root could be completely different. And most of the time when people get to that root, there's like a weird mixture of, this is exactly what I expected, but there's also elements that I would have never guessed were there too. So if you're experiencing intrusive thoughts or hypervigilance or these checking behaviors or emotional flooding or numbness or comparison or panic or the constant feeling of dread that another discovery is coming, I want you to understand what those reactions are trying to do. They are trying to protect you. And their effort to protect you is exhausting. But they're not evidence that you're somehow broken. They're evidence that some part of you has not yet received the message or believes the message that you are safe now, that you can trust yourself. And healing doesn't mean just going back to who you were before. It means the betrayal becomes something that happened to you rather than something that your brain believes is still happening and that you're responsible for. And whether you stay in the relationship or leave, whether your partner changes or doesn't, that kind of healing is possible.